discuss. So it should be a lot of fun.
Yep, no doubt. No doubt. Now, before we bring on Ken, because we're going to devote the rest of the show to Ken. This coming Monday, that's the 30th at 1:30 a.m. Pacific time, we have a full moon, and that full moon is very profound. And I actually took the liberty of running your chart, Ken's chart, and my chart.
And
And
sneaks these things in.
I know. Well, where this is going to hit at 4 degrees of Gemini, and a full moon like this, that is this kind of eclipse, what this will do is expose areas of your life where that need improvement or need to be worked on. And it's actually going to look to about 8 to 9 degrees of Gemini Sagittarius in your own chart. And this gives us cosmic push to make needed changes in our lives. And the areas of life activated by the eclipse could see some dramatic turns, after which the path is clear to move forward. Now, always remember something. When you have a full moon, the full moon is the culmination of the lunar cycle, which is designed for us to let go of whatever we've been holding on to that doesn't serve us anymore. And this lunar eclipse in Gemini heightens our awareness of flaws in the structures of our lives, particularly in communication, transportation. And you have to be very careful with this because decisions that are made at this time could be very emotionally driven. And the chances are that people will be with the Gemini Sagittarius axis could be cranky, just irritable at that point in time.
Are
So,
you saying Ken and I are going to be irritable?
no, neither one of you, never. So, some look, this is a time, and I'm going to use language you use all the time. This is a time where cognitive dissonance is not the way to go because things are going to get revealed at this full moon. And again, like it or not, it just will. So, but we also have to know that because of the Gemini Sagittarius axis, the discoveries that are made could have some exaggerations to them. So the idea at this full moon, and I'm going to put a big post on this in Facebook and to my mailing list. I've done a lot of work on this already, but we just have to have perspective. That's the idea, because the full moon can bring out the worst and the best in people. So let's keep our heads together. And the other thing about full moons that they're good for is magnifying pre-existing problems so we can bring things back into balance. That's really the key. Not always your topic of choice, Ken, but how do you view full moon and stuff like this?
Well, the full moon magnifies emotions, as you well know, as well as other spiritual states. And I always use it as a time to meditate. The meditations during the full moon can be quite intense. But if you're going to do that, you have to be sure to clear your chakras and sphero and to make sure that you're in a positive place because you don't want to magnify something that's going to cause you trouble.
So let's bring Ken in. Ken, you and I have known each other since like 2000, 2001, I think,
Yeah,
roughly.
Space Odyssey.
And we have studied together, we've worked together, we've gone on house blessings and clearings together. And you and your wife and Audrey and myself, another couple, we have dined together many, many times. So we know each other extremely well. And your background, your story, and your pathway into spirituality is very fascinating because you have been an incredible. You're a partner in one of the biggest, highest bankruptcy firms that there is. You are a law professor at UCLA, and you found this gateway into the metaphysical, spiritual, ritualistic work. You're a Kabbalist. You're a teacher. You've been a student. I guess the question is, what happened to you, John?
Well, there's a lot of things I haven't done, and I don't intend to do them. Skydiving, bungee jumping, whole bunch of stuff.
I'm right there with you, Ken.
So, you know, given your very left brain, let's call it typical normal background, okay? Let's call it the early part of your life. How did you gateway into this path that you're on? Because your story is quite fascinating.
Well, I certainly had no idea that this would develop. It wasn't like when I was young that I heard voices or saw visions or had some idea that I was going to do metaphysical or spiritual work. As you said, you know, being a lawyer and a professor, it was very analytical, very what you see is what you get type of life. And I had that kind of normal life for many, many years. I was lucky enough, though, to work at a law firm that had a sabbatical program. And in 1983, I took 3 months off with full pay and went with my wife to Europe. And while we were out in the middle of some field in France, I was reflecting on my life. And I decided that it was really a blessed life. Everything was good, except I had some pain in my neck and my back. And it would be great if I could get rid of it. It wasn't terrible pain. It was, you know, like stiff neck kind of pain. So after that trip to Europe, I decided to start getting massage and ultimately chiropractic. And those were big steps for me because I didn't have any experience with those kinds of things. That led to trying acupuncture. Doreen actually bid on acupuncture session at a charity auction and won it. And she said, I'm not going to let people stick needles in me. You go to those things. You'll try it. So I tried it. And acupuncture actually relieved about half of my food allergies, and I gave temporary relief to the pain in the back and neck. So over the years, this didn't become an obsession, but it became sort of a question, you know, why is it that if you get a massage or you get a chiropractic adjustment, the back and the neck tighten up again? Why isn't it just gone? And so I started looking into it deeper and trying to see if there were stored traumas or things like this. And I tried different kinds of massages when we went around the world, some active, some passive. And then in 1997, at the law firm partners retreat, I signed up for something called a Reiki massage. I didn't know what Reiki was. It wasn't a massage at all. I was fully clothed. And this woman put her hands around me, didn't touch me, but put her hands around me in different positions for an hour. And after an hour, I was just floating, Nick. There was no pain, nothing. I was just in a blissful state. And I couldn't believe it. I mean, how could it be that if I was, you know, in a tight state, that this woman, without touching the body, could give me a deeper state of relaxation than any massage ever had? So I asked her what she did. And she gave some new age answer about acting as a catalyst to activate whole life energy and giving me attunements. And I didn't really understand what she was saying, but I said, where can I learn how to do this? And so she referred me to a teacher in Beverly Hills of the Radiance Technique, Authentic Reiki. And I studied that and found that I had some knack for it. So I started doing it on myself and my family and keeping it, you know, close to the vest because it didn't really square with the law practice and the teaching at UCLA. And it started opening things up. What that led to in 1999 was access to something called pranic healing with a master, Choa Kok Sui, of blessed memory. And he taught me pranic healing, and pranic healing had a spiritual side called arhatic yoga. And I started studying arhatic yoga and meditating, and all this stuff started pouring through. Energy, knowledge. I would wake up, my hair would be standing up, and I had knowledge of healing modalities that just weren't there the day before. It was absolutely wild. And so that's basically how I started into it. And I started doing chronic healing on people. Word of mouth started to spread. I never really advertised because I had a very busy life. And Around 2001, I incorporated the Klee Ministry as a charity to be the umbrella organization for my spiritual healing work. And I started seeing clients, and I've seen probably over 2,500 since then. And it's still going strong. It'll be 20 years next year.
I've been to you many times. Nick has been to you. And I have to say, you know, I definitely go to Nick, but those times that I've been to you have just been amazing. I mean, just amazing. I'll never forget that time that we did that gazing business.
Soul gazing.
Sure.
Explain what that is.
I can actually do that with the audience or with you. What it is, you know, you've heard the saying that the eyes are the windows to the soul, and they really are. I mean, the body is just a casing for what we really are. We are an immortal spirit, and the spirit sits in a soul star above our head, about arm's length above our head, and it comes into the body. And you can access and connect with somebody at a soul level, and it's extremely powerful. I do this somewhat during the satsangs that I teach twice a month on Tuesday nights at 6. And it's a very powerful experience. And what happens is, if you program it to be a mirror for the person, they can actually see your faces change, and they'll start seeing some of their past life experiences. It's a wild thing. My path has been to be eclectic. You know, most people learn 1, 2, maybe 3 different things. For example, you do hypnotherapy and crystal layouts and space clearing, and you read the tarot and palmistry and things like this. When I sat down to start drafting a book on Introduction to Energy Healing, I found that I had studied over 65 different energy healing modalities. And that's astounding. And when I have people mentor internships, not during COVID, of course, but before that, it's overwhelming. And you never know what's going to come up in a session. I don't have any preconceived notions about if pulsars are going to be put on the body, or there's a crystal layout that's going to be done, or tree of life work, or whatever it is. Every session is different.
Right. And that's, and one of the things that we hear is through the years is that we innovate techniques here. So where I have studied techniques out there outside of myself years ago, like you were talking about channeling and information coming in, that's what's happened for me. And so that's why every like once a year, every 18 months, all of a sudden a new class comes up because I've channeled a new technique. And a lot of them, I'm very, like you're one of the first people that I call, Ken, that's got this, there'll be a class in 6 months as soon as I perfect the curriculum. Well, perfect, it's never perfect, but. And by the way, as a compliment to the people watching, I can't speak for Ken, but Ken is the only person that I will work on me.
Right.
I will not let anyone else do energetic work on me.
And it's always very... Go ahead, Ken.
I said I had no idea, Nick. That's very kind.
Yep. Yeah, I won't let anyone... I won't let anyone get under the hood of this machinery.
I sometimes can, but in a whole other way.
In a whole
other way. You know, it's funny. It's very funny. He comes home from those sessions with you, and over the years, I'm always like, so what happened this time? And you two are like two wizards working together. So whether you're working on him or he's working on you, it's always fascinating for me when you come home and it's like, what happened this time? And some of the stories, it's like pretty incredible what you two are able to do.
It's just amazing. And it just comes through, you know, new openings, new techniques, new vibrations. It's really a gift.
What's one of your favorite memories or stories of you and Nick working together on each other? You know, what was one of those ones for you that was like, whoa, you know?
Well, I think it was the first time cosmic consciousness came through. You know, cosmic consciousness is really a very high level of awareness that transcends our day-to-day life. There are lots of transpersonal energies that we work with. In Kabbalah, I work with the Chaya tree of life and the Achida tree of life that are transpersonal. And we all know there's a group consciousness and group thought forms that we are in the process, hopefully, of disconnecting from during this chaotic time. But cosmic consciousness transcends even our solar system. It's way out there, and it's a very, very high awareness. And all of these different things have their purpose and their cycle and their function. It's very interesting how they all interrelate.
Ken, one of the topics I want to touch on, and there is a and it's something I want you to expound on, but the source is someone you and I knew years ago, and the area is the concept of people being metaphysical versus being spiritual versus being ritualistic. And then, of course, we have communal, way over there, we have communal religion too. And so the circumstance I'm referring to is that, and Ken, you know this as well as Audrey and I do, is that we can observe what goes on, but staying out of judgment is really key to how we, you know, progress in consciousness. And years ago, this individual, in fact, it was the individual that referred you to me to come and study with me, asked me one time, and I could hear the judgmental tone, and it was, how spiritual. When I heard that tone, I knew it wasn't a genuine question, and so I purposely answered, oh, very. Now, the people that know me very well know that I am a metaphysician. I am spiritual to a point, but I've also said publicly, and when I've done more major media, you know, you have to remember that I'm not a toga, sandal-wearing granola eater. You know, I'm not the Dalai Lama. You know, I'm a husband. I'm a dad. I actually coach high school softball. I invent martinis. I like a great meal, you know, but I'm not that holy. But that question, when I was asked that, I said, oh, very. And I said it on purpose, what the response would be. And the response was, it's fascinating how people see themselves. So I knew the response was going to be judgmental. And I wouldn't give that individual the satisfaction of where I was going to put myself in her eyes. So you know who I'm referring to. So how do you in today's world, in breaking down, in there is spirituality, there's metaphysics, you know, there's ritualism. What's your take on this?
Okay, well, it's not a simple question to answer, but let's break it down into pieces. First of all, let's just start with religion and ritual. So originally, the purpose of religion was to organize people, the masses, and to give them a spiritual experience by teaching them techniques where they could connect to the divine, the spiritual energy, the divine energy for the Star Wars fans, the Force. You know, you can call it Ki, Chi, Mana, Prana, Holy Spirit, anything you want to. It's the same spiritual substance. But of course, what happened over the years was, and with most religious practices, the connection to this energy, instead of being direct, became something that either had to work through an intermediary, depending on the religion, or that became intellectualized and just became a rote ritual where you said words, but there was no knowledge of how to use them or no intention. And from my standpoint, there are some benefits from that in terms of teaching character building and good qualities, but it's not true spirituality. True spirituality, from my perspective, is when a person connects with his or her higher self, with the spiritual energy that is who they really are, their spiritual essence. And there are simple techniques to do this, simple meditative techniques to do this, and that's what the prayer rituals are supposed to be all about. Now, metaphysics involves the invoking of these spiritual energies and applying them in practical ways, hopefully for purposes of good. I mean, we know there are dark magicians and people who use this for ill, but from my standpoint, the good white metaphysician is someone who takes these spiritual energies and channels them to help other people, like clearing the chakras, raising their vibration. On my website at www.kliministry.org, under the online classes, the very first things I have are free meditations. One of them is on clearing the chakras. Another one is on raising the vibration. Raising the vibration can make a huge difference in someone's life. And what you're doing is you're taking their soul frequency and you're taking it out of the doom and gloom of the rational mind and the ego, and you're raising it to make it more in tune with the beauty and the joy and the peace and the love of the higher self.
Yes. Love that you do that. And I love that you make it available for people. That's just incredible. Yay.
Well,
I think we need a lot more of that.
People have the keys to their own healing. You know, the human is one of the only animals who can think him or herself sick just by anxiety and worrying and not being in the now. And the rational mind is great for doing things like practicing law, balancing checkbooks, stuff like that. But it's so negative and it's so judgmental. You know, talk about the judgment of others. We're the toughest taskmasters on ourselves. So instead of cultivating compassion and mercy and forgiveness for ourselves, we are all over ourselves for every little mistake that we make. And that's not right.
Some years ago, I was channeling angels and we got into the topic of Judgment Day and telling the short version of that story, because that was the audience that I had with them. They said the whole concept of Judgment Day, they said, that's you humans. You look at good versus bad. They said, we don't look at good and bad like that. That's not how you're not judged. They said, it's a whole different set of circumstances and observations. They said, but that's man saying good and bad.
And from my perspective, the challenges that we have are here in this world of duality to enable us to discern between good and bad, right and wrong, etc. There is no duality in the spiritual realms once we drop the bodies. But here, the duality helps us hone the soul by being able to discern the right choices to make. It's all about making the right choices. It's not about how famous you are and how much money you have and how many cars and all of this. It's really about raising the level of spirit to a level that was higher than when you came in.
And when we are dharmically aligned, and dharma is the innate sense of right versus wrong, not according to law or dogma, but knowing what the right thing is to do. That's a big part of dharma. Yep. You know, that sense. Earlier today, I had texted a question to both of you, and both of you can respond to this. And that was, you know, how does one go into the feeling of their heart and know when they're really in a place of gratitude and appreciation? Remember what I said?
Sure.
I didn't see it. Ken, go ahead and I'll answer next.
Okay. So first of all, I think we need to define our terms. And curiously, Nick, you didn't know this, but I told you in my November 14th satsang, I did... a satsang on appreciation and gratitude and forgiveness.
Would you, for the audience, define satsang?
It's a sitting and transmitting spiritual presence. It's something I can give you a taste of if you want to feel what it's like.
Sure.
So here, just be receptive. Just go into your heart or in above your head, wherever you want, and just tune into this.
Yeah.
Okay.
Got it?
Yes.
Oh, yeah.
That's a little taste. So it's a direct transmission of spiritual energy. You can see how it made Audrey glow.
And my eyes water. Whenever I'm experiencing heavy energy, my eyes just do that.
Well, that's because when you download this type of energy, it can drive out some of the heavier emotions, some of the sadness or the sorrow. This, for example, the sorrow about your oldest daughter. So it's just coming to the surface and erupting and leaving the system. So I devoted, and during the satsang, I usually have a theme. So in anticipation of Thanksgiving, I picked appreciation and gratitude and forgiveness. And I think of appreciation as the recognition of the good qualities of yourself and others. So being able to discern and identify the good qualities enjoying it or engaging in it, it is great. Whereas gratitude takes it a step further. Gratitude, feeling the appreciation. So one of the exercises you can do is have somebody go into their heart center and really feel the love that they have for somebody and feel how grateful they are to have received that person's love. Or alternatively, to have given love to somebody as a mother does to her children. There are people, regrettably, who don't have a frame of reference for gratitude and appreciation because they've been so cut off from it. They've been abused and they've withdrawn. And so what I'll do is transmit a vibration so that they can have a frame of reference for it. So in very short form, put your awareness in your heart center. This would be appreciation. And this would be gratitude.
Yeah.
As you both know, there are entire branches of yoga, bhakti yoga, that are devoted to devotion to the guru. And some of it's been abused where the guru has exploited the students or the chelas and in fact created slave labor. But some of it's really been great to give somebody the opportunity to be of service and to express gratitude is wonderful. And what I showed the students during the satsang was that if they return gratitude to the teacher, it magnifies 1,000-fold. So if you go into your heart and send me gratitude, you'll feel what comes back. I'm going to take my hands down so you know I'm not doing anything.
I would like to say something really quick before we do that, because that our audience might be thinking this is just directed to us. And I want everybody to really get that you're directing it out to all of us. And it's not just watching it in the moment, but it can be anybody who's watching it even after this
right,
show.
When it re-airs, yes.
Yeah, that's one of the amazing things.
It is, and it's truly amazing. And just as much as we're all connected through the ethers, the energy is doing the same thing. So just as much as we're all looking at these images of each other and we're experiencing this conversation, the energy that you're sharing and we're receiving is literally the same thing. So when he's having us do it, whoever's watching at any time, consider yourself a part of that reception.
Oh, yes. Absolutely right. Absolutely. That's the way it works. And people may be skeptical about this. If they're rationalists, I can understand that. But you can all relate to going into a room and having the experience when people start laughing, other people start laughing. Or, contrarily, you're at a party, everybody's having a good time, and somebody enters the room, and the air is let out of the room, and all of a sudden it's like a lead balloon. So we've all had those experiences over the years. That's how the energy works.
Yeah. That's what you call a turd in a punch bowl. All right, so with that being said, let's do this. What you were just sharing.
Okay, so just send back a little gratitude and just feel what comes back to you. Mm-hmm. So even if you can't be grateful for yourself yet, you can send gratitude to somebody else and it will help you. It will change you. It will make you lighter and brighter and more in touch with your spiritual essence. Now, a word of caution here. The rational mind and ego will do everything it can to subvert this process because it's all about doing, not about being. And the spiritual experiences get you in touch with your beingness, being a human being as opposed to a human doing. The rational mind tries to distract you. You go into meditation, it tells you what's on the shopping list or the to-do list. It chatters. And it's a defense mechanism on its part. So you can watch this and begin to watch the thoughts that bubble up. You don't have to engage them. You're not your thoughts. And so that's a different level of mastery that you can begin to cultivate.
So, Ken, I have had quite a few clients over the years, and I've had my own experience with this where there's been, I literally just had somebody, I believe it was today or yesterday, who said that when she was little, you know, she was very tuned in and she was able to access that. And I guess she had somewhat of a scary experience or whatever. And I've heard many experiences where people are like, you know, I was tuned in and I just shut it down. And then they want to have it as their experience again. They want to be much more connected. And they have a challenge with opening up to that because of that mind that you're talking about there. What can you tell those people?
Well, I can tell them that they're not alone. This is quite a typical experience for those who come in. If you look at a newborn baby or a young toddler, they're constantly in a state of awe. Their eyes are wide. They're agape. They have no judgment. They're just taking in everything. That's the state we want to be in. That's who we truly are. And then we get socialized, usually by our parents, sometimes by our siblings, and we begin to lose it. Some of us lose it because we have an experience on the astral plane where we encounter some creatures or thought forms that aren't very appetizing. And that can create a stored trauma. So whether it's through hypnosis or other energy healing, if you take that trauma or that block out, then you can open up the higher sensory perceptions so that they can experience these things again and give them some tools to deal with some of the heavier forces that they can encounter.
If they don't have access to who is able to do something like that, are there any techniques that you can offer?
Absolutely. With respect to every error, and when I say error, all of these dark energies, all of these blocks, they're all error. They're misunderstandings that you've reached about the truth. They're not the truth. They're error. If you can take your awareness and meditate into the root of the error and underneath it, it will disappear. You know, science recognizes that you can't pinpoint the location of an electron because when you bring awareness to it, it moves. The awareness moves the electron. And so it's the same thing with these blockages. You take your awareness, you dive deep, deep, deep into it and under it, and it will disappear.
So I think on a level, diving deep into that, they have to make it a safe place for themselves first. Yeah?
Of course. They have to be willing to trust that their life is going to unfold just the way it should and that they'll be able to handle anything that comes their way without fear or terror, without anxiety or worry.
There's a part of it being divinely protected.
That's right.
Yeah.
Ken, the basic blueprint of how you do work is very similar to mine, our techniques. You have some other spices that you've thrown in the just like I do, but our blueprint is very similar. In all the thousands of people you've worked on, what do you find is the most common area of challenge for people within the area of a chakra or a topic of life? Where are people getting hung up the most?
I would say that I'd break this down into two specific groups. The people who are power-based, how can I beat them? How can I control them? Almost always have solar plexus chakra and liver chakra issues. The people who have been beaten up, who have low self-esteem, poor self-image, any teenage girl seems. They have root chakra issues, and in the Tree of Life, Netzach, and usually Hod issues as well, need to rebuild their sense of self and their sense of well-being. So those are two very different groups. They each have different sets of problems, but they're both extremely common.
Where do you find that energy work isn't like traditional therapy? Where do you find when you address something with someone, let's say it is a challenge of whatever magnitude, where do you find there's the most pushback or resistance?
Well, the most pushback and resistance is from the person who is head-based and not heart-based, who wants to try to know and understand and control everything. Because the nature of the metaphysical work involves energies that are beyond the capacity of the rational mind to know and understand and grasp. And being able to go from the intuitive to the rational, and to have the rational accept it and not challenge it and not put up defenses and barriers to it, is probably the biggest problem. For meditators, it would be the ultimate surrender, right? And the irony, of course, is that unless the ego surrenders, there is no enlightenment and there's no persistence of the ego. For the ego to survive the physical death, there has to be enlightenment, which requires surrender. So the ego is its own worst enemy. That's the way I mean.
Ken, in all the different great results that you've had with people, if you can think back over the last 20 years, in someone that you helped with a particular problem, obstacle, where did you get feedback where you got the most satisfaction of that person is better, they feel better? Can you remember something that?
Sure. One of the very first healings I did was on a real estate broker who had to walk with a cane because her left knee didn't work. And I've seen her precisely once. This was a long time ago. She came in, she sat down in the chair in my healing room. I took a look at her etheric body, and the area over the knee was completely missing. It was just shot. So I cleaned out the knee chakra. I rebuilt the etheric body, put a healing blanket on it, and she could get up and walk and didn't need the cane. And she thought it was a miraculous healing. I thought it was simply patching a hole in the etheric body and cleaning out the chakra. So I got satisfaction from it because she was so pleased and it was fulfilling. But understanding that we're not doing this work, that we're just being conduits for it, and getting our egos out of it is very important. The ones that I have been most amazed at are the healings where I would say grace comes through. So I don't know how to describe it, but this is no known modality. There's a substance, in Hebrew it's called chen. It means grace, and it is an energy from spirit or the higher self that simply comes through and works miracles. By a miracle, I mean it's something that I can't explain on a rational level. So I just explained to you patching the knee, and if you could see the etheric body and work with it, which you can, this is not, you know, miraculous. We understand there's a technique, we do what we do, and of course that's the healing should occur. We understand it. But I worked on a separated shoulder once where I held my hand over the lady's shoulder and this amazing golden white light came through, and the entire separation closed instantaneously. You know, this is like a needle in a haystack. It happens maybe once in 2,000 healings, once in 1,000 healings. But when it happens, you just sit there and you go, oh my God, you know, it's just amazing.
Yes, and like you, Ken, and Audrey too, you know, I'm always in awe of it. I'm never jaded by it. And I don't come in with expectations when I do the work. I simply do in a state of being. I had a situation 20 years ago where I was working on them and I actually heard one of their ribs like snap and go back into position. I hear this crack.
Yeah, now, you can have physical adjustments. I think one of my most satisfying healings was when I was working on a little boy, and I've worked on four generations of this particular family. He was a young boy, I think he was 8 at the time. And he came in from an area outside of Palm Springs, drove a long way. And unfortunately, he had kidney cancer. And in one session, the kidney cancer fully abated and disappeared. Not just went into remission, it's just gone. And thankfully, it's never come back. So I would say that's been a very gratifying experience for me. And also for some of the people in his family who just didn't think that kind of thing would be possible.
And we had a session, I had a session with you, and I had a lump. And I never went to the doctor about it. I don't know if you remember that.
I do remember. And
I explained to you that I had this lump, and we talked about it, and we understood what it was to teach me, and I got it. And we basically did a process of letting it go. And I think it was 3 days later, it felt different. So I put deep appreciation on it. And within another, a couple of days, it was gone. And it was, it was just amazing. And that was my own personal experience with you. I go to you or I go to Nick, and it's just incredible what can transpire in the healing of a body. So when you're able to take that kid and to heal it, everything is all just energy. And when we do whatever it is that we do to, what would you say? Is it changing the energy, understanding the energy, redirecting?
It's really a few different things. I would say ultimately it's getting to the rising cause of the energy and eliminating the cause. Yeah. But in terms of technique, you can either transmute it or you can take it out and get rid of it and replace it with something. Those are the two basic methods. I do want to say that, of course, there have been numerous failures over the years. It's not like everything is easy. ALS has been very difficult to deal with. Pancreatic cancer, extremely difficult to deal with. I've been able to solve it, but I've not been able to knock it out.
You said that the pancreatic one is such a challenge. I understand that it is. Why do you think it is?
Well, most cancers eat anything that come their way. And a lot of energy healing is based on sending energy to something. And of course, if it's eating it, it's just making it stronger. So that's one example of why traditional energy healing techniques might not work. What I do is I try to go inside and break the critical mass of the black hole that's at the center of a lot of these things.
And a lot of times there is a mentality that exists with whatever the issue or obstacle is. Sometimes, believe it or not, even in the energy work, there is a level of psychology that comes into play in the dialogue that we have with the client.
I'm glad you mentioned that. I have a lot of clients who have blocks, say, I allow, I receive, and things like that, to let the energy in, because energies from the outside in can meet resistance.
And I didn't even tell you this, Audrey, but I just got, in my career, 9th reported case of where a woman thought she, for whatever reason, couldn't get pregnant and got pregnant.
Woohoo!
And that gives me joy to know that people want, I never laid a hand on her, Ken. Get that smile off your face. it's like people take on beliefs and it's wonderful when people want to procreate and for whatever reason they're told they can't, they never will or whatever, and you can get them past whatever that belief system is, so the body will receive. It's just marvelous, and I'm so happy for them when that happens. Ken, we're getting low on time here. For anyone that would like to reach out for you to have a session or get to know more about you, how can people get in touch with you?
Well, the best thing to do is to send an email to info@kleeministry.org. That's KLEEMINISTRY.org. And then there's always the website. You can't book a session there, but you can access some of the meditations and some of the online classes that I have recorded.
I think it might want to come with a little bit that there is a bit of a waiting list, right?
Yes, there's a bit of a waiting list. Although during the Zoom period now, when I'm doing the remote healings, the wait list isn't as long as it is for the in-person sessions.
Well, having had so many sessions with you, I got to tell you, it's well worth any wait.
Well, you're very kind.
Truly.
I mean it.
Well, thank you so much for having me here tonight.
You are more than welcome. Ken, thanks for being on our show, and we would love to have you back. It's good for people to get to know who you are from our audience, from LA Talk Radio.
You're welcome anytime.
And going forward, we can focus and hone in on more specifics of techniques that you do and in person at some point be more demonstrative of those techniques live on camera.
Happy to do it, Nick.
All right, wonderful.
Both of you have a wonderful Thanksgiving.
You too, Ken. Say hi to Doreen.
And for those of you watching out there, thank you for watching. This has been Mainstream Metaphysics. We want you to have a very, very good Thanksgiving. Remember to show appreciation and gratitude for what you have.
And we're very appreciative for you. And I got to say, we're into year two now, and I just can't even tell you how much we appreciate your support and your sharing with your friends.
Yeah, thanks so much. We appreciate the viewership. And next week, our guest is Carolyn Hennessy, actress. She's done a lot of work, and she has her own technique of ritualism called hoodoo. And Carolyn is a hoot. She's a wonderful guest.
She's so much fun. We've gotten to be good friends, and she's just going to be fascinating. So definitely mark your calendar for her to be, for you to join us next week.
Until then, take care of yourself. Take care of each other. Good night, everyone.
Good night.
You're listening to Mainstream Metaphysics with Nick and Audrey Newmont, only on LA Talk Radio.